You're now listening to the TaxSmart REI Podcast, the number one tax podcast for real estate investors.
Your source for all things real estate, accounting, and tax. Here we reveal our secrets that can save you thousands in taxes, streamline your accounting process, and help grow your business. Stay tuned to hear insightful interviews with industry experts, successful real estate investors, and current clients on what strategies they use to grow their business and how they steer clear of Uncle Sam.
Hey, thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the TaxSmart REI Podcast. This week, Ryan and I are joined with tax expert Nathan Sosa to discuss the essential do's and don'ts of S-corporations for real estate investors, including what are S-corporations, why you shouldn't put rentals in S-corporations, when S-corporations do make sense for real estate investors, establishing a reasonable salary for your S-corporation, and the Bramlett structure that can help real estate flippers and developers minimize taxes on the sale of their properties, and much more. We're going to dive into all of this in just 1 minute. Hey, are you ready to discover how to use real estate to build tax-free wealth? Well, this year, we're taking our annual summit to the next level by incorporating wealth-building strategies alongside our traditional tax and legal insights. Thus, we proudly introduced the 2024 Tax, Legal, and Wealth Summit for real estate investors taking place May 17th, 18th, and 19th, right from the comfort of your own home. This extraordinary free 3-day virtual event is meticulously designed to arm you with the strategies the 1% use to cultivate tax-free wealth through real estate. Whether you want to build, safeguard, or grow your wealth, this summit is your golden ticket. Visit www.taxandlegalsummit.com to reserve your free tickets today. Again, that's www.taxandlegalsummit.com to reserve your free tickets. We'll see you there, but for now, we'll dive right into today's episode. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. Again, we're back here and we're with Nathan Sosa, tax expert, S-Corp expert, among a lot of other things. We're going to be diving into S-corporations today. Nathan, would you be able to give our audience a brief introduction to you and your background, how you got here today?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Tom. So essentially, I kind of like got into S-Corp, so really early on in my career, because I continued to get things wrong on my tax returns that I was preparing way back in the day, and the partner I was working with kept harping on me over and over and over again. So I was like, I have to know this stuff. I'm tired of getting this stuff wrong. So then I really dove deep into what S-corporations are, how they work, and you know, who they work for as well, when it comes to like all those kinds of items. So I really wanted to understand all that stuff. So I did a lot of like personal research and just honestly also went and got my master's of taxation at Denver Law to be able to understand how all this stuff works. And I learned from some really incredible people and I've had some incredible mentors ever since then when it comes to these kinds of things.
That's awesome. And taxes are not easy. So doing all the research, getting the master's in tax definitely will help a lot of people navigate the situation. So before we jump right into the nitty-gritty of S-corporations, let's just start with a basic overview of what an S-corporation is to begin with.
Yeah, that's a great question, Tom. So an S-corporation, essentially, it is kind of like a hybrid tax scheme, right? So normally, like we have C-corporations, right? They have been in existence since the beginning of tax time. Essentially, they are a corporate entity. They're their own taxpayer. It's how the really big businesses function. They operate, et cetera, you know, for a lot of different reasons. And so what they have, instead of having partners, like a partnership, they have shareholders, and that's, they get stock, right? Well, an S-corporation is similar in that sense. So the shareholders own stock. That's how you get your percentage of it. There are no public S corporations. All S corporations are private. So you can't go and be a public S corporation like you can with the C corp. So if you own the stock, then you are an owner in the S corporation. And then the other part of the S corporation is that it's a flow through entity, a pass through entity, right? So essentially, the business operates and the business is its own separate entity, files its own separate tax return, do 315 and extension 915. But in this case, now everything you do like passes out K-1s to the shareholders, not the partners, the shareholders in this instance. So then the shareholders then report the K-1s on their personal tax return. So it's kind of a weird structure where it's like it looks and smells like a corporation, but acts like a partnership in a lot of areas. Now we'll dive later in today about some things that don't get turned off for an S-corp that are still active and apply to a C-corp, but then some things do matter and get turned on for a partnership. It's a really weird, funky combo that has a lot of strange opportunities to go with it. So you can choose from day one to be a C-corp or an LLC, and you can also do that with an S-corporation, but the S-corporation is the only one that at a later point in time you can choose to elect to be, if you're an LLC, or you're a C corporation, you can choose to elect to be an S corp. Now, however, if you're a corporation, you choose to be an S corporate. If you are a C corporation and choose to be an S corporation, there's a lot that needs to be untangled there. Now, with an LLC, it's a little bit simpler. So essentially, you just file what is called a Form 2553. And at that point, you mark a date that you apply to. You can only go back 2.5 months to either the start of the tax year, or if you're an LLC, to whatever, you can go back 2.5 months to elect to start as an S corporation. But once you file that form, you have the proper shareholder sign, you mail that to the IRS. And that point in time, if they get it, sometimes they don't get it, and whether they run into issues there, but at that point in time, you are now treated as an S corporation and you are a flow through entity.
Now we have a solid understanding of what an S corporation is. Let's dive a little bit into why you shouldn't put rental real estate into an S corporation.
Yeah, we could talk about that probably all day, and we could probably just put this on repeat and put it out there just like an hour saying, don't put your rentals into S corporations, right? If you follow me, Ryan, or Tom, like, we're constantly saying on LinkedIn, please, we're begging you, investors, stop putting rental real estate into your S corporation. Advisors, stop advising people to put your real estate into S corporations, right? I had a client the other day, had no idea, but he had a bad advisor tell him to put real estate into an S corporation, right? And so it's like, honestly, if someone's recommending an S corporation to you and it involves real estate, maybe get a second opinion. But yeah, like, the reason you shouldn't, there are honestly a lot of reasons. The first biggest one, in my opinion, is if you put basically appreciated property, which ends up being real estate, into an S corporation, then later on you go, you know what, I want to quit claim this out. I want to like move this to a different LLC for some reason. Well, at that point in time, that's going to be a sale because of a certain provision in the tax code. Whenever you distribute appreciated property out of a corporation, and S corps fall under that corporation part of the umbrella in this instance, that ends up being a taxable sale to the corporation, which, since the S corp is a pass-through entity, ends up getting taxed to the shareholder. So even though, like, sure, you do get the real estate and it is at appreciated value, however, you do probably have to pay capital gains tax at that point in time.
Right. And that could be painful for a lot of people. I think we've seen some circumstances where people had to pay very high tax bills or were looking at paying very high tax bills if they were to make that move. So that's probably the biggest reason, or at least one of the biggest reasons. Are there any other reasons why people should avoid S-corps?
Yeah. So one other reason is you don't get any qualified non-recourse for your basis, right? And like, well, what's qualified non-recourse? Well, if you were a partnership and you contributed real estate into the partnership, now your mortgage, since it's secured by real property, which is real estate, once again, you're going to get additional basis and you're going to have the opportunity to take more losses that come from real estate, right? It's like we talk all the time on here about the fact that there's a really good ways to get paper losses from real estate, whether it's cost segregation study or other types of items. You're going to be able to have the ability to utilize losses. However, if you don't have qualified non-recourse, there's a chance that you run out of basis. And if you don't have basis, you can't take the losses. So in an S corporation, you don't get the ability to do that. You don't get any quote unquote debt basis in an S corp. It's only, you're limited to stock basis. That's one of the large differences with an S corp versus a partnership, is that a partnership, it's an interest, or like, you have like quote unquote partnership interest, right? That's how it's defined in the tax code. But when it comes to a corporation, like an S corporation, it's stock basis, which is a totally different item and runs into totally different rules from that standpoint. Do they work similarly? Yes, but you don't get any basis for debt in an S corp. And that's a major issue that you can run into when you do contribute the real estate into an S corp.
That's a good point. I know some people actually run into that issue too. So that's another reason to not keep them in it. Do we have any other reasons that there might be to not put rental properties in S corp?
Yeah. And this is one that, that like we've talked about a lot, Ryan and I, like for some of our clients, is that like, if you've got real estate sitting in your S corporation, like one of the biggest advantages that we talk about is a swap till you drop, right? And so essentially when you or one of your, like, or someone passes away, right, then you get a step up in basis of assets. So at that point in time, whoever inherits the properties, the partnership interest, there are mechanisms within the tax code that allow you to get a step up in basis. So basically, at that point in time, whoever owns property, if you buy the property at like $100,000 in 1960, and then once you pass away in 2024, 2025, it goes, and let's say it's worth $1 million now. Well, now the basis of the property is $1 million. And that gives the inheritors the ability to either sell that property for no tax. And so that's a major advantage using the tax code. When that property is sitting with an S corporation, it immediately becomes 10 times more complicated because you only will get a step up in basis for the stock of the S corporation. You're not going to get the step-in basis for those rental properties. And so now what happens is you have to do a very complex liquidation of the S-corp to take advantage of sure, you still got a step-in basis for the S-corp stock. If you liquidate in the same year, you get the step-in basis and sell the rental property simultaneously. That's the only way you can semi-mitigate this. Even then, it's very complex, and I 100% recommend talking to a tax advisor to work through this scenario, because if you don't, then I imagine you're going to run into a lot of issues, and it's going to get really complicated for you really fast.
Yeah, and the key thing there that Nathan said is that it has to be in the same tax year, right? Like the winding down of the S-corp, right? If you are going to have, you know, the sales of real estate, and again, in an S-corp, the quote-unquote sale, right, the taxable trigger to you, the event, is either outright selling a property or if you even just distribute it out, right? That was one of the very first things that we talked about. You just distribute out a property out of an S-corp to you, that's still a taxable event, right? So you might have this step up in basis because maybe your parents had all these properties in an S-corp. Great. The assets within the S-corp are not going to change. And like Nathan said, you've got the step up in the stock basis. Well, if you're going to sell the properties, which are going to have a huge gain potentially, okay, you also in the same year have to sell and dispose of all the S-corp stocks. You basically have to align all of this, and it just can become cumbersome or not what you want to do, right? It's just a lot. And depending on the number of properties and things like that, like Nathan's saying, like it just could become cumbersome. And it's just yet an additional step and an additional kind of considerations that we need to think through. And then what if you want to pass along those to your kids, right? Maybe you're the one who's right now, you've got kids. What if you want to pass those along, right? It just becomes more complex. And now you're pushing down this whole like, hey, now your kids have to time this and so forth. So just a lot of complexities there that we don't want to run into with S-corps.
There might be some practical limitations to that as well. I mean, if you have an S corporation with a substantial amount of properties in it, like a large number of properties, you might not be able to sell everything in 1 year. I mean, we know that selling property isn't always easy. And depending on the market that we're in at that time, it may be very challenging to actually do that and do it at favorable prices to you. You might have to take a haircut, like a fire sale almost, to get it out. I'm not saying that is going to happen, but it could happen. And we don't know what's going to happen decades down the road. Let alone sometimes even this year, but it's just another consideration. And I know we're talking a lot about the kind of why not to put rental properties, and we're going to get into when it does make sense to use an S corporation for real estate in general. But before we move on to that, any other reasons that investors may need to be aware of before we move on?
Yeah, I definitely think there is another important one to talk about. So we were talking about like not getting debt basis before. Well, there is in a S corporation, there's like, once again, so we have like stock basis, right? So going to that stock basis, it makes it very difficult for us to take some of the losses that we might utilize on a cost segregation study, or we might use for just like regular depreciation, right? So like that's like we'd mentioned before, paper losses from real estate. But if it's only the cash that you've put into the corporation, or that's so like basically you've like that's where your basis is from, it's not coming from the mortgage, it's not coming from anything else that you've done, you're not gonna be able to take advantage of your losses. You're not gonna be able to take advantage of cost seg studies, because basically once you get to your stock basis, all those losses get limited at the S corp level, and you're not gonna be able to take advantage of them because of your basis limitations, right? So basically it's like, if you're just contributing cash into an S corp, but you want to do cost segregations on your rental properties, you're very likely going to be limited to that stock basis at that point in time. Now that's because S corporations are flow through entities. And so because of the flow through piece to them, they're going to be stuck at the basis. And then once you try and claim that on your tax return, then it's going to just going to be limited at that point in time because you have no basis. So if you put in $100 today and then you take, let's say like, you know, $100 operating costs, but then you also have depreciation flowing through, well, you're not going to be able to take advantage of any of that depreciation that normally that if you held this in a disregarded entity, like a single member LLC or in a partnership, you totally get to take advantage of those items. But in this case, you're not going to because limitations that come from stock in an S corp.
No, absolutely. It's another great point. I think you mentioned before, we have it in the notes for the show, with disproportionate distribution. So we know with like partnerships, for example, thanks to special allocations, which we're not going to dive into today, but there's special like ways you can allocate certain types of expenses to different partners and disproportional like distributions, like one partner could get a higher distribution than the other for whatever reason that you may want to do that. So from an S corporation, you can't do that, right?
Let's say you have two shareholders, right? And you both are like, you know what? We're going to own these properties together. We're going to be best friends forever. And as we all know, is like eventually like something happens between partners, right? And so at that point in time, someone goes, look, I did all the work for these properties. I want them out. I just want to own them personally. So like now you try to distribute the properties to yourself for some reason because like you don't want to share them with a partner or some other reason, right? Well, let's say the property is worth $100,000. You can't just give one distribution to one partner. They both are going to have $100,000 distribution. So basically, the corporation is going to have to find a way to distribute $200,000 at that point in time. So like not even thinking about like the sale issues that we had before is just now is that like we can't just distribute to one partner $100,000. It's going to have to be split somehow. So if they're going to get the property, the other partner is going to have to also get a property or cash or something from that standpoint that's in the S corporation, right? So normally a partnership, we can make distributions per operating agreements and they can be a little bit wonky at times versus an S corp. It always has to be whatever ownership percentages say. If it's 30% one owner, 70% the other owner, that's the way all distributions have to run from that point on. Now, if it's like a lot of times we see 50-50. That's why I brought up the 100,000, but whatever the ownership percentage is, we have to follow that to the law. If not, we break our S corporation. And when you break an S corporation, it becomes a C corporation, which is even worse than an S corp, in my opinion.
Yeah, C corporations could be a nightmare, and you should definitely not put rental properties in a C corporation either, at least in this context we're talking about here today. Hey, are you tired of working with generalist CPAs that tell you you can't use the real estate professional status, the short-term rental loophole, or cost segregation studies, or worse, have no idea what these things are? If so, it's time to elevate your game and work with a CPA firm that gets it. Here at Hull CPA, we've worked with thousands of investors, helping them save millions of dollars in taxes through proactive tax strategy and planning, tax preparation, and outsourced accounting solutions. So if you're ready to elevate your game, make tax filing painless, and save thousands of dollars in taxes, what are you waiting for? Just head on over to www.therealestatecpa.com/podcast to request an initial consultation today. We are accepting clients for the 2023 and 2024 tax year. So if you're looking to make a change, you have nothing to lose. Again, you can request an initial consultation by visiting www.therealestatecpa.com/podcast. We look forward to hearing from you and learning more about your situation and how we can help. But for now, we'll dive right back into today's episode. Moving on to when investors should consider using an S corporation, under what situations would it make sense for an investor to use an S corp?
It's a great question. When should real estate investors use an S corporation? And a lot of times it's going to be when you are a like agent slash broker, and like we've branded this many times, like check with your state first, right? New York, New Jersey can be very not favorable when it comes to S corp elections. And then also it's like, okay, if you're a wholesaler, a flipper, construction, essentially, if you're going to be in some kind of service industry, that's at that point in time where you are the asset or your workers are the assets, that at that point in time, I would say, hey, an S corporation could be helpful for you, right? And like, I don't think we've discussed why S corporations would be beneficial, right? So there's a very important business influencer out there by the name of Cody Sanchez. And she's been talking a lot recently about S corporations and been talking about the tax savings you can get from them. She's not wrong, right? Like she's got some diagrams and there are some people out there who are saying, well, you're not including all the facts, but if you are in a service business, there is definitely opportunity for you to use an S corporation to help you save on taxes. Now, what kind of taxes that help you save on? S corporation earnings are not subject to self-employment tax. So that means that there's a 15% tax that people are subject to if they are running some kind of business on their own, right? If they are a consultant, if they're sole proprietor and you have earned income, you're going to be subject to self-employment tax at a 15% rate. Essentially what that is, just that's our Social Security and our Medicare tax. It's like FICA is equal Social Security, and that's basically like a 12% tax essentially, and then Medicare is essentially a 3% tax. So it basically gets us to that 15%. I'm rounding numbers, just FYI, but it basically gets us there. Now, S corporation earnings are not subject to that tax, but there is, again, a caveat in there that we'll talk about more in a little bit. When you are an S corporation owner and you're providing significant services to your S corporation, you need to pay yourself what's called a reasonable compensation. So that means that not all of those earnings are going to be technically free from self-employment tax, because you'll have to pay yourself a W-2 wage and pay yourself a salary from your S corporation to yourself as its owner.
So you mean you can't just have an S corporation and take everything out as distributions and pay no self-employment tax?
I would highly recommend against doing something like that. There is lots of guidance from the IRS and also from tax court cases that say very much differently. Actually, there is a tax court case called McClary that actually was a real estate broker who was a president. He ran everything by himself and he tried making the argument that he did not have to do reasonable compensation for himself. And he had an agreement written up He didn't execute the agreement, and also the agreement was way lower than what the IRS and the tax court both determined to be what reasonable compensation was. We can dive more into that, but that's an example of someone who, and he took all distributions but no salary, right? So like, definitely not something that we recommend, and something that the IRS and tax court will not agree with, or a good advisor.
Yeah. And something to point out is that everything as far as the type of industry or the type of work, being an agent, being a wholesaler, flipper, construction, consulting, all of that profit, all of that income is subject to FICA, self-employment tax, whatever you want to call it, that 15.3% tax. But the distinguishing fact for rental properties is that rental properties are not subject to self-employment tax, right? So that's a big distinction too, because some people are going to hear this and like, oh, great, I can get savings on FICA tax from rental properties. Well, no, they weren't subject to it in the first place. So that's yet another reason why the S-corp for rental properties doesn't make sense, but it can for these other businesses that are subject to that. And so that's, in my opinion, that's why this is even of consideration in value, is really just that FICA tax savings. And I'm sure as we keep going, we'll talk about other things that, you know, you've got additional costs administratively, you've got to file additional tax returns. We might get into that in more detail, but it's not just as simple as, right, Nathan, you kind of mentioned Cody Sanchez's, you know, diagrams and things and pictures. It's really focused on the FICA tax savings, but we have to look at the other side of the coin, which is the administrative costs that go along with that. It's not just one size fits all. You've got this type of business. Great. Go do an S-corp. You need to talk to an advisor.
You know, reasonable salary is super critical. Can we drill down into that a little bit of what that looks like for people? Like, how do you even know it's reasonable in these cases?
It's a fantastic question. And actually, like, we've actually gotten guidance on like how we should look through that and walk through it, right? So like in a case called Watson v. Commissioner, it's actually a CPA owner, I believe. If not, we might need to cut that, but I'm pretty 90% sure it's a CPA. It was a CPA who actually did this. And so they kind of, there were three factors that the court walked through. They basically were like, what is the health of the business? Then common sense and salary comparison to similar firms or industries, right? So the health of the business, right? So like, how's business doing? How productive is it? Where is it at in the market, right? Well, if your business is doing like four times what everybody else is doing in the market area, like in this case, then you probably need to have a larger salary to yourself, right? There's not going to be a way you can say, oh, my business is, if your business is making money, not losing money, then you're not going to have a very good case to say, oh, I don't have to find out what reasonable compensation is. So then common sense, right? So what exactly is going to be the salary here? And so basically it's like you look at the market around you and you decide, okay, how many hours am I putting in a week, right? Am I putting in 40 hours a week? Okay, what would someone in my circumstance, level, years of experience, et cetera, what would they be making if I wasn't the owner of this business, right? Or if I was, like, what would I be doing? And then also like, look at what people in your area are making, right? And so figure out from that standpoint, it's like, what would someone in my area make? What would their level be at? How much are they getting paid hourly? How much are they getting paid like on a monthly basis, yearly basis? Like, we live in the world of the internet, so it's very easy to jump on to like Glassdoor or Monster or some of one of those sites out there to figure out salary comparison. Those are things that I would take a look at. What would you guys think about looking at?
Yeah, I always see it as if I was going to pay someone to do all of the roles that I play with the number of hours that I'm putting in and the experience that I have based on like my location, right? We're a virtual firm. So we're like almost a little bit unique. We get like kind of a uniqueness here. But at the end of the day, you need to be comparing what would you pay someone else? That to me is essentially to summarize it as simply as possible. With all the things you're doing in your area, number of hours, what would you pay someone to take on all of your roles? That would be like my bottom line statement.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know in my experience doing reasonable salary calculations, we have like a, I guess you could say, proprietary system that we use where we use BLS data, so the Bureau of Labor Statistics in some cases, to determine and do like a weighted average, so to speak, on the different roles you're playing, the amount that would normally be compensated for those types of roles, and the location you're in, and things of that, and other factors around that that give us, you know, a pretty clear argument to make on why the salary that's ultimately chosen is a reasonable salary. That's how I've done it in the past.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, that's like, Ryan, I love that point. And then also like using the Bureau, yeah, using like statistics that are readily made available to us is a fantastic way to figure out, okay, to me, that sounds reasonable, right? So like, that's kind of comes down to the bottom line of it. It's like, what's reasonable? You know, it's like, are we, the goal here is not to pay ourselves something too low, right? Because if if you look at Cody Sanchez's diagram that she has, she's going to show that there's going to be a low salary. It's like, I think the example has $115,000 of like net income from the business. And so, and the person hasn't paying themselves $40,000. Well, is that reasonable? Would a broker in that area actually be paid a $40,000 salary? Who knows, right? It's like very, like obviously, like very nuanced because there's no actual examples or fact patterns. But that's the thing, that when it comes to these kinds of areas of tax, it's like, what are our facts? What are our circumstances? How are we making these determinations? And then taking a look at all those things to then determine our answer, which is why having a tax advisor, especially when it comes to an S corporation, is very crucial and key.
Yeah. And I would also just add, if you're listening to this and you have an S corp and you're working with your CPA, your tax preparer, you might hear this kind of 50% rule thrown around there. I'm laughing because like, that's almost like an industry standard, almost like, yeah, that's okay. Not that I'm saying that's okay for you to use, but it's almost become within the CPA tax community as something where it's like, hey, as long as you're doing at least 50% of your profit, that's fine. I think there's issues to that because there's no scientific way, there's no logical way other than to say, oh, I made less 50%, right? Or I made more, it's 50% of that. It's a lot less considered there. And I think we just need to be careful. If you're hearing that, oh, my advisor always says 50% of my profit, you just need to be careful and think another step or two to think through, does that actually make sense based on the other things that we've already discussed? So just be careful. Bottom line, if you're just hearing 50% of profit, you need to think more than that.
Couldn't agree more, Ryan.
Absolutely. Moving right along, you definitely need a reasonable salary if you are heavily involved in the business. And again, if you don't know how to calculate one yourself or you're unsure, we are taking on clients. So you can go visit www.therealestatecpa.com/podcast and request an initial consultation today. And we'd be happy to learn more about your situation, see how we can help.
Nathan, maybe you could just give us a little bit about like other kind of relevant aspects of S corps. We've talked about kind of the positive of FICA tax savings, but talk to us a little bit more about other things that people should be aware of as far as costs. And I know I mentioned them a few minutes ago, but just kind of walk us through a little bit of that as well.
Like, I won't like say like, oh, you have to file 941. Like you got to file payroll reports. You have to file like a W-2. Sometimes you got to file quarterly throughout the year. And like, it basically, it's a headache. You can do it on your own through QuickBooks if you want to. I highly not recommend that because payroll taxes have people go to jail and like missing that, because like that's literally back taxes. And that's literally how people like if you've seen the movies, when people like 90% of the time, because they're going to prison for taxes, is because they were late on payroll taxes, right? That's the one thing you cannot be late on as a business owner. If you are late on payroll taxes, like that is probably the one area that's like technically not even your money. You're collecting it for your employees. And in this case, since you are a reasonable owner, for yourself. So in that case, like you can't withhold that. You need to give that to the IRS when it is its time. Now there are a lot of deadlines. There are a lot of weird scenarios with payroll tax that I don't even know about and don't even know how to go into. So definitely recommend finding a good payroll company to work with to advise you on that.
So I know the QBI deduction that came in with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. Are there any issues with the QBI deduction and S corporations?
Yeah, there can be, right? So like Ryan was talking earlier, if you just like roll with like 50% of my net income is going to be my reasonable salary, right? Well, there are a lot, like when it comes to qualified business income deduction, there are a lot of calculations if you are over a certain threshold, right? And so like there come to limitations. Basically, what happens is your W-2 ends up really factoring into your QBI calculation. And so if you're paying yourself a super low salary, then you're not going to get to take advantage of that. And vice versa, also, it's like once, if you choose to be an S corp, right? So think about the QBI deduction as kind of a way to help mitigate that self-employment tax for the people who are not S corporations out there. So like you get a 20% deduction if you are under a certain income threshold. I believe it's like $190,000. Basically, if you're under that threshold, you're going to get a full 20% deduction for your business, right? So basically, you're going to get a free deduction that came from the government back from TCJA, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So you get 20% deduction. However, if you're an S corporation, so like let's think about this, for example. I'll try to make this as brief as possible because not everybody wants to hear numbers. But if you have $100,000 of net income as a sole proprietorship, and you have $100,000 of net income from an S corporation, right? So let's just say that's before wages are paid from the S corp. So that sole proprietor is going to get a $20,000 deduction from their net income, right? Now, if you are an S corporation, so you've got $100,000 net income, then you pay yourself a $40,000 salary. Now your net income is at $60,000. Those W-2 wages that you're still going to get taxed on your 1040, those are not eligible for QBI, right? So like I said before, is that like there is a complex calculation, but in this scenario, you're not going to get to take advantage of that $40,000 W-2 wages. So now you have a $60,000 net income threshold. And so now you're going to be taxed at 20% at that $60,000. So you're not going to be able to get as big of a deduction that the sole proprietor got to on the other side. So like, it's once again, like one of those things, it's like, is an S-corp the right, like, I know we're talking all about the negative parts of S-corps. And like, even though like there is great self-employment tax savings here, there's just a lot of administrative burden that goes into it. So that's why we want to ensure when we're going through this advice is basically letting you know all the caveats, because it's not just a simple election. Sure, it's easy to mail a form in, check a box, fill it out, send it to the IRS, but there's a lot of implications that could happen to you if you don't set it up properly. Like, there are great tax savings, and there are a lot of people that we've been able to work with and save money on when it comes to S corporations. But simultaneously, there are people who have not needed to make the election that made the election. And we then later had to either work with them to clean it up or to fix some of the issues that they had.
So to summarize a lot of this discussion, as you're thinking about pros of an S corp, the main thing is FICA tax savings, right? That's the 15.3% savings. But then we have to think about some of the cons or additional things that are going to go with this, right? We've talked about payroll. Payroll in itself, just so you know, is not free. We've got an additional, maybe a couple hundred bucks to run payroll. But on top of that, you've also got to spend some time figuring out what is my reasonable compensation. Then we've got things like our own tax return, right? The own S corp tax return, especially if you're just a single member LLC, you just include something on your individual tax return as Schedule C, compared to now, if you're an S corp, now we've got an additional tax return. And depending on costs for your tax preparer, you might have additional costs there. And then we just talked about, right, we've got to talk about qualified business income deduction. So it's not as easy as just FICA tax savings. It's not as easy as just figuring out some of these additional costs. It's also then considering the almost a balance of what's the ideal wages versus taking that qualified business income deduction. So there's a lot going on. And the last thing I would just say here is that unless this gets extended, the qualified business income deduction is phasing out after December 31st, 2025. So we'll see, right? We have on our podcast talked a lot about potential tax bills coming due and who knows what might happen if that gets extended. But that could be yet another complexity of, oh, maybe this doesn't make sense in 2025, but maybe it does in 2026 or whatever, right? Depending on how that goes. So just be careful, think through that. Don't just think through the whole 50% S corp, yes or no. There's a lot to consider is my point.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And one more thing we've talked about, super important. We've not talked about this here ever on the show. So it's super exciting to have Nathan on, who's an expert or knows a lot about this subject. So would we be able to jump into the Bramlett structure and what that does for investors and why investors should maybe take a look into that?
Yeah, Bramlett is a very interesting case and honestly has created a slew of interesting tax cases from over time, right? So essentially what happened was Bramlett back in 1992 created a separate partnership, right? They believe it was four or five partners that ended up investing into buying some slices of land. And so at that point in time, they then took the slices of land. They purchased the land in a partnership. And then, and like these people, these individuals were in real estate from whatever stance, right? So like they individually had their own things going on, but then together these five or six guys invested in this partnership, bought land. Then what they then did is they did plan to start developing this land at some point in time. So what they then did is they sold the land to an S corporation. And so why did they specifically choose an S corporation? Well, there's this code section called 1239, right? So the code section called, so there's actually two code sections here that are very relevant. It's code section 1239 and 707B. I'll start with 1239. So when it comes to 1239, whenever you sell depreciable property to a related party, which in this case, it was the same ownership for the S corp that it was the partnership. But normally that gets flipped to be ordinary income at that point in time, if the property is depreciable. Now, if you sell land is not depreciable, as we tell people all the time, even though we still see it. There's a tax court case yesterday where someone depreciated land. But basically, you can't depreciate land. So therefore, that means when they sold the land to the S corporation, they got a fair market value assessor. And so they basically found what the price would be if they sold it to a third party, sold it to the S corp, got the stepped up basis. then began to develop the land and then sell it off, right? And so they sold off the land as they were developing it into townhomes, into condominiums, houses, residential property, etc. So as they were doing that, they were able to sell it off. And once again, like we were talking about before, they're able to save on this, on the ordinary income and self-employment. So still tax ordinary income rates, right? But they're able to save on the self-employment tax and to get the step up in basis because they purchased the land at such lower values, they were able to take advantage of a much higher basis for when they sold the land as inventory within the S-Corp. And so back to 707 as well, I didn't bring that up. If you do it as a partnership and you sell it to related parties, same issue, right? It's going to be reclassified as ordinary income is what you run into that from that standpoint. But this transaction is called a land banking transaction, right? And so I'm not an attorney. If you've talked to any tax attorney, it's probably one of their favorite strategies to talk about. But essentially, if you and there's like a lot of caveats here. Like I mentioned facts and circumstances earlier, but there's a lot of tests with like a, there's a list of factors we have to run through called the Winthrop factors. There's seven of them, but essentially you need to run through those and run through them with a experienced tax advisor to see if we can make sure that we've got basis for this, if it happens in the future. So I don't know, like any questions you guys have about that or anything there?
No, but just to kind of summarize where we are so far with this, the Bremowitz structure, basically what it allows you to do is if you have land that had appreciated over a period of time, if you were just to develop that land, right, it could be considered ordinary income if you go and sell it because now it's under development, unlike a rental property, right? If you sell it, like if it's determined that basically you developed it for resale rather than investment purposes. Right. But what the Bremowitz structure allows you to do is sell the land to an S corporation. And basically, you lock that in at the capital gains tax rate, more or less. And then when you develop that land and you later sell it, you'll only be subject to the ordinary income tax on that appreciation from the point in time when you sold the land to the S corporation to the point where when you sell it, ultimately, the property to the third party, which could be significant depending on the extent to which you develop that land.
100%. Yeah.
So the main value is when you have land and then you sell it to an S corp and it's got a lot of appreciation on that land. Correct? Is that fair?
Correct.
Okay. Yep. All right.
One thing I do want to mention with this kind of structure is that currently it comes down to, are you a real estate dealer or are you an investor in this scenario, right? Because there's times that you can be seen as an investor and there are times that you can be seen as a dealer. But right now the IRS is whipsawing a lot of taxpayers. So basically like in this scenario, we're trying to say, hey, you have capital gain. Well, the IRS, every time this has come up so far, they're trying to say, no, this is ordinary income. So they're currently trying to whipsaw taxpayers in this scenario right now. And even though we have a basically 30 years of tax court law saying otherwise, currently the tax court has ruled in some scenarios against the taxpayers and saying, no, you are either whatever the worst scenario is for the taxpayer. So if you wanted to have an ordinary loss in your property, then they're saying, no, it's a capital loss. And if you wanted to have capital gains versus ordinary income, they're currently saying, no, you have ordinary income. So that is something that is going on right now. It's a little bit of a whipsaw. There's an incredible Tony Nitti article out there called The IRS Whipsaw Taxpayers. If you're interested in reading it, I would highly recommend working with a tax advisor when it comes to this kind of scenario and this situation, just because there's a lot of nuance and there's a lot of facts and circumstances that must be analyzed to make sure that you can or if you can win.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So long story short, you should not go and implement this yourself.
Basically, yes. Do not go do this on your own. Yeah, definitely go work with someone. Hire a real estate tax CPA or come work with us and we can definitely help you out with this kind of structure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Nathan, is there anything else you would like to leave the audience with before we wrap up for today?
You know what? Like I'm following the footsteps of Ryan Carrier here and I'm posting on LinkedIn. So if you want any updates when it comes to tax bill, tax legislation, or just you're curious to learn anything more about how to save on taxes as a real estate investor or even as a business owner, like just give me a follow on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. So we'll go ahead and drop that into the show notes. If you do want to follow Nathan, I highly suggest doing so. If you are into this stuff, you do want to stay up to date, especially on this new bill with bonus depreciation, go ahead and check that out. Want to thank everybody for tuning in and we'll catch you on the next week's episode of the Tax Smart REI podcast. Hey, before we wrap up, I wanted to remind you about our other podcast, the Major League Real Estate Podcast for syndicators, fund managers, and large-scale operators. Brandon Hall and Dylan Brown dive deep into subjects including finance, tax, market analysis, team dynamics, optimizing operations, leveraging cutting-edge technology, and a lot more. If you like the Tax Smart REI podcast and you're a large-scale operator, you're going to love the Major League Real Estate Podcast. You can check it out on all major podcast platforms, including Apple and Spotify. Again, that's the Major League Real Estate Podcast, available now on Apple, Spotify, and
wherever else podcasts can be found. That's it for today. We'll catch you on next week's episode of the Tax Smart REI podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's show. If you enjoyed the show, please find us on iTunes and leave us a review. You can also email us at contact@therealestatecpa.com with any feedback or topic suggestions. We are always taking on new clients, and with the new tax laws in play, you really don't want to navigate this alone. Let us help you save money on taxes and with your accounting and CFO needs. To become a client, navigate to our client page at therealestatecpa.com and fill out a web form with as much detail about your situation as possible. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week.